It's Paul Hamilton.
Guys, how are you?
He keeps the people coming back for more.
My Uber dropped me at the wrong terminal, so I had to wait for a bus.
On WGR.
Oh, Paul's travels. Always an experience for
him. Is that a new one or an old one there?
Middle of the pack. Happy Friday, everybody. Very tough loss for the Sabres. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And we're going to get this morning started off right away, as the Sabres will have a busy morning today as they'll now travel to Montreal for Game 6. So we welcome in Paul Hamilton here on the Western Hotline. Paul, good morning. How are we doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Well, could be better. Yesterday started amazing. The first period was a period of hockey, Paul, and then it really kind of got away from the Sabres in the second.
You know, it's rare to see a team come out like that at their best. Well, kind of their best, because they did allow Montreal to stay in the game, but some of that was just a little bit of luck, you know, pucks hitting skates and going into the net. But the Sabres were fast. They were going north to south. They were winning battles. They were going to the net. They were getting pucks and people to the net. A lot of guys were looking good. And, you know, you could take a 3-2 lead and everything's going well. And then it's just a total collapse in the second period. It completely and utterly reverses. And I remember, I'll probably on every show, including with you guys, we would, in the regular season as it wound down, you were saying, well, is there a team you'd rather play or rather not play? And I said, really, the only team I would try to avoid is Montreal. I just don't think the Sabres match up well against them. I didn't think then when we were talking about it that they would. And Lindy Ruff hit the nail right on the head. He said, when the Sabres make a mistake, Montreal makes them pay. When Montreal makes a mistake, the Sabres do not make them pay, because too many guys are not on top of their games right now. And really, I think the very obvious turning point, I think many people would agree and probably have said it, is, you know, when Tage Thompson has the breakaway and he goes in and he makes that play all the time, you know, where he, you know, goes to the far side and lifts the puck over the goaltender. Couldn't lift the puck. He also can't stick handle. You guys can take it from there. That's been a huge problem. His stick handling and lack of it has cost them 3 goals directly in this series. And that play, he makes it all the time. And he didn't even come close to lifting the puck. As I said, is there a problem? Again, I'll let the fans and you and other people that may have their, you know, have your opinions on it, because that is the play of the game right there. Where he scores that, makes it 4-2. The fans will continue to be blowing the roof off the place. And, you know, you got your 2-goal lead. And the bench, it would be up and everything. And then after that, it's a thing. The Sabres can't defend Montreal either. They defend them very poorly, where Buffalo normally is a very good team defending. But against Montreal, they're not. I mean, Timmins wound up on the bench for most of the game after he gives the puck away for 1 goal and then doesn't get to Anderson on the other one. And Anderson's there for a tap-in. Very poor coverage there. So, you know, but he's not the only one. I mean, the Sabres' best players are not their best players. They're not even close, where Montreal's best players have joined the fray and have, you know, help to take over the series. And, you know, you can just take it one-on-one to go with the goal scorers. Caulfield is outdoing Thompson. Suzuki is outdoing Tuck. Hudson is outdoing Dahlin. And it's by a lot. It's not by a little. And when that's happening, I would almost say you're almost lucky you're at 3-2 with a chance to tie the series in Montreal, where you've been 4-1 on the road this year. In the playoffs, you've been a good road team all year in the regular season. So, you know, you have the opportunity, just like I said before game 4, you can erase all this. Go in, you play, go find your game, go play, defend better. They did stay out of the penalty box, but still, they're 2 leaders, Thompson and Dahlin, take silly penalties, and now Montreal's 2-for-2 on the power play. And sometimes the Sabres have done very well on their penalty kill in this series, and sometimes they've been horrendous. Their penalty kill has been very up and down in this series, where it hadn't been up and down, well, a little bit during the season, but for the most part had done very well. The penalty kill won them the game in Montreal. Certainly you give them two power play goals and a 3-2 lead turns into a 6-3 deficit and giving up four unanswered goals to, you know, two of them on power plays.
Yeah. The penalty kill, I think, especially, Paul, has been a big issue for them. Montreal, I mean, that's one of their superpowers is that power play. Even when their top guys weren't getting going on 5-on-5 throughout even the Tampa series, they were able to get going on the power play.
I think at times it's been an issue. The power play won them the game in Montreal.
Yeah.
The penalty kill. The penalty kill won them the game in Montreal. I mean, they did a phenomenal job. But at times, yes. But I wouldn't say all the time. It's been very, very inconsistent, I think, is the right way to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I do want to get to the guys that have not been performing. We didn't even mention Alex Tuch there either. I think that has to be a real question going forward for the Sabres. But, Paul, it was almost stunning for me in that game. We talked about how fast they started in the first period, how fast they start in the second period. It felt like a goal was inevitable for the Sabres. You mentioned the Thompson play, the breakaway. If he scores there, it's 4-2. But for me, it was also just how quickly it completely unraveled for them. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen does not finish the game. He doesn't even play in the third period. Alex Lyon goes in. It was just, you're right to point out, like, where Buffalo almost can't punish Montreal for their mistakes, whether that is Jakub Dobish or their team as a whole. Montreal just felt like the moment the Sabres took the pedal off the gas, I think this is fair for three of the last four games, all of a sudden everything goes Montreal's way. They can load up on the scoreboard and really just take control of the game, kind of in the blink of an eye, really.
What's the head scratcher is you had Dobish on the ropes.
You did.
He
absolutely
almost was pulled.
Three goals and four shots.
Another goal. He's out. He's done. And they stopped shooting. They stopped. Then they decided they're going to try to pass the puck into the net. It's like, wait a minute here. What did you miss here? You just scored three goals on this guy. You got him on the ropes. He doesn't look good. Why are you not shooting on him anymore? Why are you trying to pass the puck all over the place and overpassing and wind up losing it before you ever get an opportunity on net? I don't get it.
The hell
then,
goal
then
is,
you then
is
you
the
kind
one.
Of let him just sit back there and get his confidence back, and you know, then he's ready to finish the game and do well for the rest of the game.
The Hellenius goal is the one I think of where he just turns around, fires it, and because that's when Dobish is having a poor run, it's a terrible goal for him to give up. But for a lot of that period, Montreal's out shooting Buffalo for a lot of that period. It was really something. It just, I guess where I sit here now, Paul, and you mentioned it already, I mean, a lot of the high-end players for Montreal, their counterparts on Buffalo, they're outplaying them. I mentioned there, too, I mean, we've talked Thompson and whatever's going on with him. Is he hurt? Is he just not playing well? Dahlin, what's going on there? I know the underlying numbers are much better for Dahlin. The guy I look to, though, is Alex Tuch. I think for as good as he was in the Boston series, he has been a complete ghost throughout the series against Montreal.
Yeah, he has. I mean, as Lindy Ruff talked about, he's not moving his feet. He's not even getting to battles. I mean, there's very few battles in the offensive zone. The chances are way in favor of Montreal when he and that line are on the ice. Now, I mean, Thompson has kind of at least come through a little bit. He has 4 points in five games, but he's also minus whatever it is, 7, 8, 9. I'd have to look it up. It's somewhere in there. And, it's just mind-boggling how he goes from playing extremely well in the Boston series to just a ghost of himself here in this series. And I don't even think he knows what to say or do anymore. You know, it's like it's not going well for him, and he keeps saying he's got to be better. And, of course, he's not wrong, but I think the wheels are just spinning. Is it the matchup with Montreal? Are they just too fast for what the Sabres like to do? And the Sabres are a fast team, too. I mean, Lindy Ruff was talking the other day, well, if you go to the analytics, we're actually the faster team in these games. But it doesn't look like it when you're watching it. And it's just like when the Sabres turn the puck over, Montreal's gone. And then the puck's in the net. When the Canadiens turn the puck over, Buffalo might be gone. They might not be gone. They usually don't put the puck in the net. And you know, it's been a huge difference in this series, and you know, Tuck has been a part of that.
Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. Paul, I don't want to do all the doom and gloom. I mean, yes, they're going to be now facing elimination going for the rest of this series, but yesterday there were some pretty encouraging things, though, as well, including the wake-up of the third line, so to say, quote-unquote. I mean, Hellenius between Zucker and Quinn. Zucker gets a goal. Hellenius puts one in the net. Quinn continues to be snake-bitten, but it looks like, at the very least, they woke up that line last night.
Can I be a jerk for a minute?
Do it.
Why is that the third line? Why isn't Norris the third line? Or why is Norris the second line? Or why isn't that line the second line?
I tried to correct myself there, Paul.
They have a top line. They have a bottom line. They don't have a second and third line because, depending on the game, one of those lines acts like the second line, and then might the next game the other line might act like the second line.
All right, my turn.
Maybe we could say they have two second lines or two third lines.
You know what? Permission to be a jerk?
Yeah.
The middle six, Paul. But seriously, the middle six has been trying to carry them, but the other part of that middle six wakes up last night.
Yeah, no, they did at least for a part of the game, you
yeah.
know, and look really good. And those are the guys that are coming through. Doan, Benson, Hellenius, you know, recently. Those are the guys that are coming through for them, not the guys you would expect to come through for them, that need to come through for them. And you can imagine where the Sabres would be in this series if the top line was playing at a high level, in addition to what you're getting out of those guys. You know, and Lindy Ruff didn't like the way McLeod was defending, so he took him off that group. And that's when Hellenius got his chance, and now he's with Malenstein and Greenway trying to, and that started in the regular season where, you know, his defending isn't even close to what it was last year, unless we're talking about the penalty kill. He and Tuck in the regular season were a good pair together. So that makes, with those guys producing the way they are, it makes what's happening to Thompson and Tuck and Krebs even worse. You know, because, you know, Buffalo might have this series all done if those guys are playing the way they were played in the regular season or even in the Boston series.
Yeah, Paul, it's something I think is both like a huge positive for the Sabres going forward. Like, it's a good problem to have. But seemingly anytime they've needed a jolt, it's been these young guys that are making playoff debuts, or they're under 23 years old, and they're coming in kind of with this almost ignorance is bliss sort of attitude. And it's the old guys, not even necessarily older guys, you know, old guys. They're not, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, but it's the leadership of this team that are not getting it done. And it has to be guys like Benson, who just turned 21, Hellenius, who's 20, you know, Austlin, when he came in the Boston series, they seem to give themselves the mm-hmm. jolt that they need. I think, again, it's a nice problem to have. It points to a very promising future going forward. But I think it also opens up, and again, the series is not over with. They play it again tomorrow, and if they win tomorrow, it'll open up a Game 7 at home on Monday. But it also opens up a lot of questions about the veteran group on this team.
And the thing is, you know, we're talking about Tuck in this series, but when Kekalainen looks at Tuck, he can look at his overall playoff play, including 4 years in Vegas.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
How did he play in the playoffs in Vegas? What kind of player was he there? Was he somebody you could count on? How did he play against Boston? You know, I think he would take the whole thing into account along with the age. And I don't think you would just take this series and say, well, we're not going to pay Alex Tuck, forget it. I think you still have to take everything and look at it, including age, you know, and how long of a contract you would want to put on it, and look at it that way. The name we have omitted here is Norris. He's not producing either.
Mm-hmm.
He's supposed to be producing offense too, so there's a fourth guy. You've got Krebs, you got Thompson, you've got Tuck, and you've got Norris. Now, Norris, defensively, I haven't had a problem with. And he seems to be skating a little bit better, but the results aren't there. You know, well, finally Zucker got a goal. Will that help get some results out of him now as far as, you know, getting actual goals? I mean, Quinn, He's the one that reeled around and took the shot that was tipped in by Zucker. But it was a good play by Quinn all the way around. So, you know, how does this take them moving forward as we go into to game six in Montreal? Can they build on it? And can all of a sudden your top line act like the top line? And you got to win two games here. You don't got to win eight games. You don't got to win four in a row. You got to win two, which they've done many times before this year. So if the top line kicks in and does what it's very capable of doing in the last two games, you've got an opportunity to win two games.
Paul, we can move ahead a little bit here to, you know, the questions about potential lineup changes for game six. I mean, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen does not see the third period of this game. I would imagine that means that Alex Lyon starts game six. Owen Power, we're going to find out the latest on him as well after that ugly spill into the boards. I think he played all of, like, I think I saw one shift after that, unfortunately. And it looked more like a tested out kind of thing.
Well, you know, Lindy, we'll find out when we see warm-ups tomorrow.
Yeah.
We're not going to find out anything today other than, well, he's this, that. He's, unless he, like, he broke something and is done for the season or something like that. But
That is finding something out.
Yeah, that would be finding something out. But I don't think we're going to get anything that will, you know, we all know how it is. And I think, you know, we'll see the morning skate tomorrow. It's not like we're going to get to see a practice today to see anything. That would at least help us with the goaltender, but we'll get a morning skate tomorrow. But even that doesn't necessarily mean anything because Timmins was a maintenance at the morning skate yesterday, and he did play. And how much did injury hinder him, if at all?
Right.
We don't know. Those are the things that maybe you find out after the playoffs. How much is injury hindering any of these guys we're talking about? Is it hindering any of the guys we're talking about? We don't know. And again, we may or may not find out after the series. I mean, there's one team that listed like a whole laundry list as the Flyers.
Yeah, Philadelphia.
Of guys, you know, that was, you know, after the series. Nobody knew what they were playing with. So, yeah, unfortunately, I wish we would get a clearer picture today, but without a practice, I would be very surprised if we did get a clearer picture until at least we can see a morning skate.
Where do the Sabres go here with Luukkonen and Paul? I mean, I imagine tomorrow it's going to be Lyon and maybe him again in Game 7. It depends, I guess, on his performance. But for Luukkonen, I would say this has been, to put it kindly, a mixed bag playoffs for him. He's solid in game one against Boston, disastrous in game two, and then he gets into the series. Very good first start, 28 saves, and then last night, you could argue it kind of took them out of the game with some of the goals he gave up in the second period. It's just, for as strong as he was to end the year, Paul, I think he's been equally as frustrating here in the postseason.
And what does Lindy Ruff do here? Does he go back to rotating? Does he play Lyon in game six? And if there's a game seven, does he play Luukkonen?
Oh, I'm sure that would get a calm, rational reaction.
Because that's, he really liked that alternating. And, you know, when they did alternate, they were getting wins. Here in the playoffs, when they don't alternate, they're not getting the wins that you know, when the goaltender comes in for the second game, it's not working out.
Right.
You know, after they win the first game.
Paul,
like it
Paul,
did.
They need those 2 days of rest.
Yeah, like it did during the regular season. So, you know, does he go back to it? Who knows? I mean, who knows? I'm sure he's talking about everything in the coach's room. I'm sure everything is on the table and they're talking about everything. How do you handle it from here? But before you start talking about game seven and alternating goalies, right, you got to get through the game six, and then maybe this conversation that we're having, they would have after a game six. Right now, it's like, who gives us the best chance to win in game six? I agree with you guys. I would think it would be Alex Lyon.
I would assume. It's a conversation I think we're probably going to have more in the offseason. As strong as their goaltender play was, there is this negative, though, that they don't have that guy. I think maybe the biggest difference in this series has been Jakub Dobesh for Montreal. He took hold of that job late in the season for them. He's played every game for the Canadiens as well. And even last night, he starts off really poor, but he stabilizes And even when the Sabres had runs in the second period and in the third period, he holds strong and makes sure it never really becomes a game again.
Yeah, no, that it's just, you know, it'll be interesting. You know, I don't think they're going to make any goaltending change. I think they like their goaltenders this year, and I would be very surprised if it's because Lyon's under contract. If it's not those two again, what do they do with Ellis? I don't know. You know, I think the minute you put him on waivers, he goes back to St. Louis. I don't know how really they feel about him. You know, we knew how Adams felt about him. So, you know, how does that play into it? So I don't think you're going to go with three goaltenders again next year. So it'll be interesting to see how they do that, but they got to figure out this game six before we get into all that.
Yeah, 100%. Paul, last thing for me here, because I know you got a busy morning. I do want to end at least on a positive note. The postseason that Josh Doan has had, I mean, thank goodness they've already signed him to a contract extension. He's one of the younger players. Funny enough, he's on the older side of things. I have just loved his game really since probably game three, if I'm being not even generous, just if I'm trying to look back all the way to the Boston series, but game three on, I think Doan has been one of their best players. And I know why Zach Benson's getting a lot of the headlines. I do understand that. But Doan has been phenomenal for them.
Well, they're working hand in hand, you know, both on the power play and on regular shifts. So I think they're a good pair, you know, to have on the ice together, you know, any way you do it with the way they play, as they call each other dogs with the W.
Love that.
And, I agree 100%. I've loved his season. I think, you know, he's really come into his own, and it's something that we all know. It was confirmed by both GMs that Buffalo was not going to make the trade unless Doan was in it. They basically hung up on it. And then Utah decided we want Paterka enough that we will put Doan into the trade. Huge mistake. Huge, huge mistake on their part. I would take Josh Doan any day of the week over J.J. Paterka, and I would have the day of the trade. I would have taken his potential because he had scored close to 30 goals, and he didn't get there, but in the AHL. So, you know, Adams was absolutely right about there being a good upside potential for him. So, it really was a good move for them. And I think almost a fireable offense in Utah to pick up a guy like Paterka, but to give him $7.7 million. That's asinine.
Right.
When you would have been a better team if you just would have kept what you had and not even made a trade. But they made the trade, and they're stuck with it.
That's the thing. I mean, Vegas is on to the Western Conference Final after last night, but you wonder where Utah is if they just kept Doan and ultimately Kesselring and just rode that team.
Because Utah has other really good players.
Exactly.
But like, they got a player. I don't care if he scores 30. He kills them, just like he killed the Sabres. And, you know, Doan does – you outlined it very well, the things that he does. And not the things J.J. Paterka does, that's for sure. You don't see Doan giving up on plays. You don't see Doan loafing back. You don't see Doan, you have to basically put dynamite up him to get him to back check. I mean, J.J. Paterka can score goals. There's no question about it. If that's all you want and you don't care about the rest of the game. That was a disastrous trade, in my opinion, for Utah.
Yeah. All right, Paul, we know you got a busy morning, so we'll let you get to it. You also got some travel as well.
Yep.
Have fun in Game 6. We'll talk again soon.
Take care, guys.
That was Paul Hamilton there on the Wester Hotline, and his appearances are brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. And yes, as we laid it out there with Paul, Game 5 goes to Montreal, and while it started off incredible, and even I would say it was the Sabres game outside of a few bad bounces going Montreal's way, it quickly dissolved into all of a sudden Montreal having complete control of that game towards the end of the second period. Just an absolutely incredible turn of events, and now the Sabres do face elimination tomorrow night in Montreal. 803-0550. Phone lines open up the rest of the way. We'll get your thoughts, and we'll give ours as well, as the Sabres do drop another game against Montreal, and ultimately, three of the last four have been very rough outings for the Sabres. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on a Friday on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Pass up on the left wing side. Sabres gain the line. To the middle of the ice. Hellenius holds it. Turns. Fires. Scores! It's raining goals in Buffalo. And the Sabres take a 3-2 lead with 9:45 still to go here in the opening period.
Dan Dunleavy there on the call from last night. Konsta Hellenius, in his second ever playoff game, goes from almost scoring two goals to actually scoring a goal. And that was, we were talking with Paul to start off the show today. That was, I think, maybe the perfect example of just send pucks to the net. Dobesh is, I thought, especially early, in his head, not in the right head space, and just everything was going in. That was like the perfect example of that. Hellenius just turns around, kind of has an opening right in front of the net, just sends it, and it's a goal.
And it's an observation made a lot last night that the Sabres start to get over passing. Mm-hmm. And I get it. You want to make sure that you beat that man if you're gonna beat him. Right now, it's try to have a beyond the shadow of a doubt kind of play just to put him out. And I understand the logic on that, but also, it's like you said, good things happen when you throw the puck to the net. And it happens also with Montreal.
I wonder if Paul is right, though, if Fowler was getting close to going in. Because the broadcast made a specific point
Peng
to note.
Put it up immediately.
That Fowler had not moved.
Yeah.
So I wonder if we really were actually that close.
I don't think they were close at all.
It's because Montreal was scoring with Buffalo. They were staying with them.
Yeah, they're staying with them. And it's very clearly, okay, I'm going to give you the period to see if you can figure your stuff out. If you can figure your stuff out, we've got a game. And, well, to his credit, the rest of the period, Dobesh does figure it out. And part of it's Buffalo overpassing, but it's not like the Sabres didn't keep having chances.
No, again, they had that spurt there. And this has been, I think, maybe a frustrating part of this series in its entirety, has been even in these bad games, the Sabres have had runs of like 5 or so minutes where they are just all over Montreal.
They're in the offensive zone and they're getting shift changes still in the offensive zone.
And that's why I did mention to Paul is like maybe that is ultimately the great equalizer of this entire series. Dobesh is becoming one of those goalies we're probably talking about next year. Like, yep, he's going to start 50 games. He's their one. Move on. Because they have just not been able to score in those situations either to put games away or to get back in them. You do go back to the Tage. You know, he's unable to lift the puck. But Dobesh is with him the entire way. If he lifts the puck, yes, it's a goal. But he doesn't. It's a perfect save. And it almost looks like it's not really that difficult for him. Then you also just have the runs of, as you mentioned, we're getting shift changes in the offensive zone. They're able to just keep peppering them. Some of them are not as high danger as you'd maybe like. But the way that game was going yesterday, and ultimately the way some of the goals were scored for Montreal, you were hoping you were going to at least get one of those, and you just were unable to. The best save Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen made last night is ultimately a save Dobesh doesn't make in the last game. It's off the backboard, and it gets a funny bounce.
And Luukkonen doesn't have to make a save on that one. Luckily, it hits the side of the net instead of, you know, hitting Luukkonen. But it is weird that kind of bounce happens again. And
in a different arena.
In a different arena.
It'd be one thing if it was in Montreal again. It's like, okay, no, it really is the Zamboni entrance. This is a problem.
And then
it's in a different barn.
But Montreal does it right back in Buffalo's barn. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, so that just got interesting. Yeah. And there's going to be a lot of criticism about, you know, Lindy playing Luukkonen in game 5.
I think hindsight's 20/20.
Hindsight's 20/20.
He made 28 saves and was great against Montreal.
He was also one of the reasons you won game 4.
Yep. That's my thing, yeah.
So either way, you're probably looking at facing elimination in game 6. Quite frankly. But this is now going to be the interesting question. Not about this one. It would be about Monday. And I hope we get to have this conversation on Monday. But Lyon's going to go in net. I wonder what kind of lineup changes or adjustments might happen. We're not going to get any of that today, probably. So we're going to have to wait for the morning skate. Oh, hey, guess what? We're on tomorrow. We're on tomorrow, and we're on all day.
I'm not. You guys are.
I'm saying we as a station.
Oh, yes. I have a graduation to go to.
Enjoy your day off.
It's kind of a day off. Kind of. I'm with family all day. It can be stressful.
It's kind of a day off.
But the UPL thing, real quick, so we'll get to your calls here in just a moment. But I think I would, as much as it, in the moment it would stress me out, I made the joke to Paul, but I probably would do this. Go with the rest. Play Lion tomorrow, but then play UPL on Monday after the lengthy rest. That is where they're getting these wins.
I will say again,
is the extra days off.
I subscribe to the theory. Good luck selling it to everyone else.
That's the only sales pitch I've got. It's a game seven. Anything goes. I'm going with a little bit extra rest. Let's see what happens.
And again, the theory might be worth testing.
It just sucks that it'll be game seven.
Game seven and Luke and Internet, and everyone's going to be freaking out.
That'll be good. That'll fit the game seven mentality, I think.
Sure.
So I'm with that. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go to the phones. Doug is up first here. Doug, how we doing?
Good. I listened to your hockey intelligence that you gentlemen have, and it's right up there. I appreciate your commentary. But
thank you.
I go back a long, long way to the Buffalo Sabres. They had a great season. No one expected them to get this far, and they did. But I think the lack of playoff involvement is a problem for them now. And consequently, there's very little physicality on this team. They don't really know how to put somebody in a position to take them out of the game or make them aware of what a check really is. They lean on people. Even their big guys lean on people. And consequently, what happens over the term of a playoff series is that you have to wear the other opponents down. Montreal's not that big of a team. In certain positions, Buffalo certainly has a greater physicality by size and weight, but they do not at all finish their checks. And consequently, when you get to these later games, if you haven't done that throughout the series, the other team is going to respond accordingly. So therefore, Buffalo's learning from this playoff challenge that they have. They may be successful in Montreal. I doubt it. There's no way Montreal wants to come back to Buffalo. So unless they really show up physically, they're done. And they're going to be realizing this after the series is over with, that we should have played a much more physical. Whether they have the people to do it, I can't answer that question, because Lindy Ruff in the history of fighting ranks number 9th. And all the Buffalo players that have had fights over the years. So he's got the mentality to decide what he wants to do. So if he's not going to be physical with this team tomorrow or the next day or whenever the time comes, they're going to lose this game again because Montreal is pushing them way through.
Doug, thanks for the call. I don't think that's the issue at all. I think the issue is they can't score and Montreal can. I think that's the big difference. Buffalo was more than physical enough against a far more physical team against Boston. They were fine. They have a difficulty running with Montreal. Montreal can punish them for the turnovers, which I think is a much bigger issue than wanting to be physical or finishing checks. They can score on the power play, where Buffalo has had a bit of a difficulty throughout this postseason on that. I think that's where they're going to ultimately lose this series. Now, the one thing I will ultimately definitely agree with you on, the playoff experience. Montreal went through this last year. Now they have a bunch of their young guys that have gone through the playoffs. They have dealt with this. They know kind of how the series goes. Some of their young guys, or some of their star players, have also had to deal with this. Cole Caulfield starts the postseason off pretty poorly. Now he's just fine. Demidov, finally for him, got his first playoff goal of this postseason. He was incredible last night. I think that's where the biggest difference is not the physicality. I think it is entirely based off of the skill. The mental mistakes are not there for Montreal. And then, as I mentioned, I think goaltending has been a huge issue. As much as I probably, if you're asking me, wouldn't have dropped Lyon for Lukanen the other day, Lyon ultimately still gives up 4-plus goals in 2 straight games.
You mentioned that they've done this already. And you point out that it's last year Montreal already went through this. 6 of the players on their roster also went through this in 2021, including
some of the bigger names, right? Caulfield,
Suzuki, and Caulfield.
Suzuki, yeah,
they get to a cup final. So in 2021, there are 6 players here, and it's a mix between the new guys in Suzuki, Caulfield at that time, to veterans, Josh Anderson, Philip Deneau, Jake Evans. They're all here. They've all been part of this.
Yeah.
And they've all been part of a Stanley Cup Finals appearance run. You add in a player like Alex Newhook, who also wins a cup.
Wins a cup with Colorado, yeah.
You add in a nice mix of these players that can do this all for you. It is unfortunately how it goes. Montreal might also just be a good team. And I think the physicality part, I want to push back a little bit on what you said, Zach. I think the Sabres are capable of both things very easily. And to push back on the caller as well, they're really good at both things, speed and physicality. They survive the Bruins, who are a more physical team, but they're not surviving the Canadiens, who are a faster team.
Well, right. That's
the Sabres are fast. Montreal's faster.
Right. My point, though, is it's not the physicality that's going to lose them this series.
Yeah.
It is the fact that they can't score with Montreal right now.
I'm also going to. That's the part I wanted to push back on. It's not necessarily that they can't score. It's just that their top players are not producing. It's not that they're not producing. It's that they're actively hurting them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just that they can't score. That top line is also the ones getting hemmed in. They're not taking care of their own zone either. They're not playing defensively responsible enough on the top line. For as many minutes as they skate a night, it's now what is hurting them. They are almost kind of the guarantee that they're going to get scored on every night right now in this series.
Tage and Tuck, I saw this last night. I think maybe Tage was like -9 so far in the series. Tuck was -8, and that was in the middle of the second period.
And Krebs is a -3 somehow.
That's the thing, though, is it has actually become a real problem where, yeah, it's their line that they're is getting scored on.
They're the ones getting hemmed in. It's not just about not being able to score. It's not taking care of your own.
Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, you have the turnover yesterday from Timmins. It's not with those guys, but the puck goes through Norris's legs.
Byram loses
up a perfect chance.
Byram loses the battle behind the net. Timmins puts a pizza right up the middle in Norris's skates, and it bounces the right way to where Byram then gets put into a spin cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But there's battles along the boards. There are plays not being made in their own zone, and it's typically the top line. It's the top line getting caved in their own zone. So it's not necessarily all about the physicality. And Doug, thanks for the call, but I don't know why you're bringing fighting into anything about the playoffs. We don't have Brady Tkachuk, okay? And even that was a terrible idea when he did it.
I'll say that might be a good thing.
That's a good thing. But it's not necessarily because of both things here. It is, they're physical enough. They're not being beat by that. And it's not just that they're not getting goals, Zach. It's that the top line's suddenly forgotten how to defend.
And are actively hurting them. Back to the phones here before our next time out. JD is up next. JD, how we doing, man?
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, I just want to say, I think one frustrating thing is I really think Montreal is the better club, unfortunately. They've been able to put up a healthy amount of shots basically every night. And the Sabres have been very spotty. Like last night, you get 9 in the first period, 7 in the second period, and then you're desperate, you get 20 in the third. And it's been weird for the Sabres because they won a game where they only shot it once in the first period, in game one, in a win. So what I'm saying is this. I think what they're exhibiting right now is that they do not get how to get these shots off quickly enough and how to play pass-pass-shoot. It's just not there. Maybe it's experience. Montreal may be a little better club at this, but the secret sauce for the Sabres, other than an active defense, is this volume of shots and making that ball that puck pinball around the offensive zone. If you're going to beat Dobesh, you need a lot of chaos. And all through their best days this year, a lot of shots, a lot of chaos, a lot of emphasis on the low slot, but the shots are quick. And they're holding these pucks, especially when they're all holding these pucks too long. A couple guys like Benson and Doan have been fantastic, but a lot of these guys are just holding these pucks too long. And I think that when they're unable to get shots, they're doomed. And Montreal has limited this. And Montreal, I guess they deserve to win. I hope they don't. I'll hang up and get your comments.
JD, you brought up Quinn there. He is somebody I found myself getting very frustrated with. I've liked his postseason. It felt like there was a number of times yesterday he was dancing into a blocked shot.
I don't.
That if he just ripped it first, it does. I'm not going to say it's going to go in, but maybe it gets to the net. Maybe there's a rebound. So many times, and that was a big win for the Sabres in Game 4. Mm-hmm. The block shot totals were way in favor of Buffalo.
Montreal had like 75 shot attempts. They only got less than half of them through.
But that's how it felt last night for the Sabres, and it is very specific, guys. Paul brought that up as well. I think that's correct. The first goal, though, is very much pass score. You know, it ultimately Zucker. It's really a Quinn goal. Quinn makes a lot of that play happen. But there is too much of they almost want to find the perfect option. They want it. Not saying this is definitely, but it seems like they want it to be the prettiest goal you've ever seen. Norris to Samuelson, kind of that sort of look of just, oh, half the net's wide open, and you could just pass it in. That is a problem I think this team has. It's also where when a guy like Tage is not going, I think it becomes even more obvious and it becomes more of a hindrance because that is your sniper. That's the guy that it should be scoring the goals, and he's just not.
Real quick, just before we take the break, though, it is kind of how they score so efficiently is the overpassing. It's one of their better weapons and one of their better hindrances all in one. It's actually like kind of beautiful and disgusting at the same time. But JD, I appreciate that you're willing to admit something that I think people should be okay with admitting. Montreal just might be the better team.
Yep.
And it's okay to say it.
I think after the last three or four games, I think it's fairly easy to say it.
But if you force a game seven, anything's possible.
Right. 803-0550, the number to call. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you when we come back on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And this is WGR. We went long in the last segment, so we've got to be quick here. Let's go back to the phones. Jason is up next. Jason, how we doing?
Hi, how's it going?
Well.
I heard you guys were talking about the goalie change.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that maybe swapping out goalies is a good thing. The Sabres have an advantage. They have two really solid goalies. As long as they're on their game, I don't see why it's a bad thing. I mean, the team's plan pregame for what goalie is in net. If you have an advantage and you have two solid goalies, you kind of throw them off their game, I believe.
Yeah, Jason, I don't know if it's necessarily an advantage for the Sabres. I think it's an advantage if you just have one very good goalie. If you have to make these decisions, if you have to talk about it and really kind of try to hone in on to, well, what's working for them? Oh, the day's off? I don't know if that's necessarily an advantage. Lion and UPL don't play the same. But a lot of what we're talking about, too, with the forwards is just shoot the puck. Don't think about it too much.
It's also, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen kind of gave you the full experience in two games.
You did.
You got the ceiling and you got the floor.
Which was kind of what he gave you in games one and two against Boston. That's why, for me, I'm kind of okay with the rotation. Boy, you're right. It'd be a tough sell. My sell would be, they win on the extra days of rest.
And I think that's what the caller is selling, too.
And to be fair, the first game is usually the good one. It's the second one. It's frustration with UPL.
I'll take a game one loss to Carolina. I'll take that deal.
I mean, you're saying he plays Carolina. I'm going right back to the switch. No, we're not playing this game anymore. Everyone's going to get the extra rest. We're not playing this game.
Oh, that's right, actually, yeah.
803-0550, again, the number to call. We'll be right back. This is WGR.
You get in a series like this and you're struggling a little bit. I think he's lost just a little bit of confidence, trying a little bit too hard to make that extra play. The biggest thing is you got to move your feet. Always move your feet. Get your feet moving, whether it's through the neutral zone, whether it's you're challenging at the blue line. That line just hasn't been quite connected. And I think it all comes down to, skating on pucks in the offensive zone. If you want to go to a couple games there in Boston in the first period, the game six, how well they moved inside the zone, feet have to get moving.
Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff in the postgame yesterday. I listened to this quote last night, and I saw Chad DeDominicis of Expected Buffalo comment on it too. And paraphrasing, but I think this is essentially what it was, are the extra plays and extra passes in the room with us? What plays are they trying to make? When are they ever in the offensive zone?
But Lindy saying something is also kind of encouraging to me and also very concerning to me. Move your feet.
Move your feet.
The encouraging part is,
hell, that's why Benson is constantly a problem for any team he plays. That man never stops moving.
The encouraging thing is that's an easy fix. The really discouraging and frustrating part of it is, Why the hell aren't you moving your feet?
Right. Why am I telling the veterans of this group?
Why am I telling the media they have to move their feet?
Yeah, it's just – and I think a lot of what Lindy is doing
there – You are supposed to be
there,
leaders on this team, and you're not moving your feet?
Yeah, I think a lot of what Lindy is doing there is he obviously does not want to throw his big guns under the bus.
That's a pretty big throw under the bus.
But it's about as close as you're going to get, and I imagine it's worse in the locker room. It's just – it's going to be hard to talk in the off season, and thankfully, because they made the playoffs, it actually won't be super long until we have – kind of an outcome for this. I think it is going to be really tough to talk about a Tuck extension that doesn't leave a somewhat sour taste in Sabres fans' mouths after this series. And to be perfectly honest, a good portion of the regular season as well, where we were wondering, is he taking this season off or parts of this season off so that he gets a better contract in the offseason? Tuck has been, for a good portion of the season, a real worry for Sabres fans. He has had bright moments, no doubt. He was very, very good against Boston. But
and
he did literally all of his work in this postseason against Boston.
It is getting a little weird, though, too. Not for, you know, the series in particular, just overall. It is weird how bad they've been playing at home. It's kind of unexplainable at this point. It is weird that I've got a head coach telling the media that the top line needs to move their feet. That's weird. It's weird and kind of encouraging and disappointing all in the same vein that Zach Benson and Josh Doan are my best forwards. Encouraging for the future. Problematic right now. Because it's great that they are. They shouldn't be.
They shouldn't be.
Yeah, it's just, there's enough going on where I'm like, you can do it. It's, here's the good news. I didn't hear no bell. They're not done yet.
Right. No, you and still it's absolutely fair to bring up.
You
yes.
still have time. You are not gone yet. This next game, and if you have another one, you are facing elimination. It is a handshake game. But the beauty of all of this is, if you win tomorrow, it is winner take all. And I can look right across this rink at a team that shows evidence that the weirdest things can happen in a Game 7. Montreal advanced, taking 9 shots on goal.
Man.
Get me to a Game 7. I don't need to believe in anything. I'm just going to watch what happens. Because it is either the end of your season or you move on.
And you kind of forget about a lot of what happened, at least for a
Who
little bit.
Who cares about everything that's happened? In the last 6 games, if you get to a Game 7, nothing matters except the game in front of you.
It is funny, too. Like you bring up that, and 803-0550, we'll get to your calls here in just a moment. The butterfly effect. They have 9 shots on net. They win that game. But what if Tampa wins it? We talked with Paul to open up the show today. I kind of agree with him now. Now that we've seen this series unfold, I thought the Sabres maybe were going to match up very well against Montreal. To this point, it has not been that. I do think they match up very well against Tampa Bay. They would have. And so you do wonder, is it really just kind of bad luck? I heard Jeremy, Owen, and Joe talking about this morning, too, of, you know, were the Sabres really actually preparing to play Montreal in the playoffs? Montreal has to go on a run to get into the spot they are in. Although they were always sort of in that 2-3 zone with either Buffalo or Tampa, whoever was occupying number 2.
Yep.
But I think it's fair to say they were probably more preparing for Boston, Ottawa, Tampa as the teams they would maybe be playing in the first or second round, not necessarily Montreal, because Montreal plays a different style than 3 of the 4 teams. You know, right? Minnesota is a perfect example of this. Minnesota really prepared to play Dallas.
Yes. I mean that matchup was kind of like written in the stars back in December.
Right. But Dallas doesn't prepare. They add Tyler Myers. That's kind of it. Mm-hmm. And then when you add in their injuries, well, it goes Minnesota's way. And then comfortably afterwards, it went Colorado's way. Injuries to Minnesota as well played a hand in that. But Buffalo, I think you can argue, and I'm not saying it's a wrong thing either, prepared for 3 of the 4 potential matchups in rounds like 1 and 2.
And that's a fair thing to do. You want to prepare for the majority, not the minority.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the right approach. I would really say that that's the right approach. I don't mind what Jarmo Kekalainen did at the deadline, also because of the fact that you were just trying to get something done. You were trying to add depth to this team.
And
I'd say
it did work in
over
in,
the course of the rest of the regular season. It worked. You won the division.
Because I don't even think we're having necessarily even this conversation either if the top line just wasn't as bad as it's been.
That's all it is at this point.
Even if it was just like, oh, they're solid. They're not great. They're solid. If they were just doing what Montreal's top line was doing for half of the series, they're kind of only good on the power play.
Tage has points on the power play. But ready?
One That's of those goals is really hard for me to count.
That's also the...
It still counts, I know, but...
Ready?
In terms of getting full credit.
That's... To say it more disparagingly, Zach, that's all the production they have.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So it counts. To his credit, it counts. It's also the only thing they've done as a trio. I need more. And it's pretty simple at this point, I think, for me. Of you play – Lindy's kind of figuring it out, by the way. Last night, it's the Benson line that plays over 20 minutes. All three of them. Tage does have 20.05 on his time on ice. So he's got that part right. Play the line that's been getting you through it. Good. Treat the Benson line like they're your top line right now because that's how it's performing. That's how it's shaking out. And they start the game against the Caulfield line. It seems like they're matchup proof, kind of.
That's what it's become through two series now.
They're the matchup-proof line. Even though Norris isn't putting points on the board, they're the line. The top line, I think it just needs to be broken up. And I have a half-baked idea. Swap Quinn and Tuck.
Right, because I think at least with Tage, he's somehow in many ways kind of falling into points. Where Tuck, as we've mentioned, he has nothing through this series. Not a thing. And eventually, I mean, I kind of got there even going into game four of maybe you want to put Benson on the top line to maybe get that going and keep Norris and Doan together, do something. But now, sort of like with McLeod going to the fourth line, I think it's the same with Tuck of like the three of them, counting Krebs in there as well, are just bringing everything down because they are playing a lot. And it's not working. They are negatives on the whole for the team. The going back and defending has been poor. You've mentioned it. They're constantly in their own zone anyways. And even when they get going, there is not the offensive production there at all.
There's Tuck having to call out himself on a bad back check in game three.
Right, calling it his worst defensive game of his career.
I've got an idea. Move your feet.
Move your feet. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's get connected to our fans as we have been all morning. And that is brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. And we'll start the segment off with Joe on the line. Joe, how are we doing?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
So I've got three things that I think are the problem with the Sabres in this series. And you guys have really touched on it anyways. But number one, our top three forwards, Tuck, Tage, and Norris, are totally getting outplayed by Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slavkovsky. Number two, our goalies are not even close to what Dobish has been playing. And then number three, which is kind of an under, this is the one I think is we're not really talking about. Montreal's best defenseman, Hudson, is playing much better than Dahlin. Mm-hmm. Dahlin's had glimpses of greatness, but he hasn't been that consistent in this series, whereas Hudson has just been tremendous. I'll hang up and let you guys talk.
Joe, and I think you make a really good point there. Thanks for the call. It's the consistency.
Hudson,
because there has been moments where Dahlin is, oh, okay, there we go. There's the Norris finalist. Here we go. Hudson, though, since like game two, has just been a dynamo for them.
Hudson has an ugly game one, recognizes it, kind of poo-poos all over it post-game, says words that are, you know, a little bit higher on the spice than poo-poos. And then puts his money where his mouth is on that.
He's been exceptional for them.
Dahlin has had great games in the series. It has not been every game. That is the problem. There's a consistency issue with Dahlin.
I think it's also fair to say it's not even been full games either. There are, this is kind of true of the entire team, which is, so it all kind of paints the same picture, that he'll kind of go away for an entire period. After the start game one in Montreal,
Oh, yeah.
It felt like he had chance after chance after chance. He's driving to the net. He is causing problems. But then there have been points in the series, yeah, the defending has been bad. The penalties he takes, him and Tage, but we're sticking with Dahlin here. The penalties he takes, oftentimes you do wonder, dude, what is going on in your head right now
and,
with that?
And even last game, that penalty that he takes, the cross-checking one, I didn't love that call. Demidov was going down anyway. But mm-hmm. Dahlin, it's kind of what I said heading into last night's game. Don't give him a reason.
Right.
And all he's got to do is not have his hands on the stick in a cross-checking fashion. Just take your hand off the stick and do the same thing that you did. No penalty.
And you're probably fine.
It's no penalty. It's mm-hmm. a hit. That's all it is. Unfortunately, Dahlin does have his two hands on the stick. It's not much of anything. Demidov's already going down. Like I said, I don't love that call. I think it was very weak.
But
the problem is...
It doesn't help either, though, that Dahlin also has done this, go back to the regular season, throughout this series, taking late penalties in periods. That's...
Tage is the one late in periods.
Well, late in periods, but Dahlin has done that as well.
Dahlin has done it throughout games
mm-hmm.
To where it is a problem. You need to be smarter. You need to be better mm-hmm. in that case. Like I said, last night's penalty I think is an anomaly. I didn't love that call. I thought it was weak. But
in terms of the consistency,
but the interference
play,
call from game four, buddy.
Well, actually, it's a funny thing. It's which one? The second one.
It's
the second one.
It's the second one, yeah. The first one's not real. But it's kind of funny. Dahlin's the victim of two really bad penalty calls in two games. And yet he also still takes egregious penalties.
Yep.
Thompson, the penalties he's been taking all series, you've got to stop. You have to stop doing this. It's late in periods, as you pointed out. It's late in periods. They're kind of finally getting things going or restabilizing even. And he takes the most unnecessary penalties in the game.
The cross check yesterday, I mean, just, dude, you're asking for it. It's
yeah.
way up high. I get your 6-7. It's way up high. Two hands on the stick, the whole thing, they're going to call that. And it comes right after a goal. They go right on the power play, and that's the one where they score 10 seconds in, right?
The player doesn't even have the puck.
No.
He's going to the boards to finish a check, but because, you know, we had a caller about not being physical enough. It's to finish a check. Just finish the check normal. What are you doing?
Yeah, I know we wanted to stick on Dahlin there. It's tough when we're talking egregious penalties to not bring up Tage at this point.
It's impossible.
It is difficult
it's
to do.
It's actually probably negligent of our position to not do that.
It's just some of the things he has done in this series, and really, I guess, postseason at large, is just really concern me going forward. Again, as positive as I am on this group in the years to come with all the young talent, again, it's the veterans that kind of leave you pausing going, oh, Are we going to have difficult conversations next year, or are they going to maybe get the ball rolling early this summer? I don't know. But some of the stuff he does, and really ultimately the fact too is he's not really a center. The team clearly wants to do better at the 1C position. That's why the Robert Thomas thing was not even just an idea, but a full-blown report, and most of us thought at least for a day it was happening. That's, I think, also why they add Josh Norris. There's a maybe hope that he just fully becomes your 1C moving forward. Lindy multiple times has tried to move him to the wing, even when it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It's just...
He's been trying to find every reason to get him back on the wing.
Yeah, and it's just...
But also, it
kinda, none of it works, but he's still a 40-goal scorer.
But also, it sounds like Lindy might be justified in that.
Oh, yeah.
That line's getting caved in.
Yeah, I think he's been justified the whole time.
He's been justified the
whole
time.
The problem is you don't get the same Tage offensive play, though, when he's on the wing...
And that's
and they're looking.
That's the one thing about Don Granato that was correct. He unlocks the offensive potential of Tage Thompson, but it has now gotten to. You can put him back on the wing and still get that production. It's fine. There's going to be questions about getting a new 1C for this team, and we will. I would like to continue to put those conversations off.
I'll do Tuesday. Tuesday, it's Robert Thomas Day.
How dare you?
Tuesday, if this goes
how
poorly, it's Robert Thomas
well,
Day.
Yeah, you have to say if it goes poorly.
If it goes poorly, it's Robert
if
Thomas
If it goes
Day.
Poorly, fine. I hope we don't have to talk about this for another month.
Right, and we'll put a bookmark in it.
Yeah.
I would like to keep the pin in that, actually. Thank you very much. How dare you?
But also, to finish the Donnelly point, is Hudson has outplayed him. Again, he has a very bad game one, openly criticized himself for the media, and then since then, I said it, he's been a dynamo for them. He has been incredible.
It's about,
even when early in the series as well, when Montreal's guys, top guys, are only doing it on the power play, Hudson is not a part of that conversation. He's doing it all over.
It's about putting your money where your mouth is at that point. If you say you're having a bad game, show me what you can do. And Hudson has been, to his credit, being that player. So, you know, unfortunately, the Sabres are the ones having to pay for that.
Mm-hmm. Back to the phones. Paul is up next. Paul, morning. How we doing?
Guys, everybody is hanging their head and saying the season is over. Let me give everyone a piece of advice. When the chips are down, when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor, we didn't win. There are two words I always think of in these situations. Hakuna Matata. It means no worries for the rest of our hockey lives. It's our problem-free philosophy. Hakuna Matata. In the jungle, the mighty lion sleeps tonight, but tomorrow he wakes in La Centre Belle, Montreal, and the Canadians are going to hear him roar. 4-0 Buffalo on the back of a Hasek-like performance from Alex Lyon. Goals from Hellenius, Benson, Doan, and Darlene. We shut them out and bring it back to Buffalo in the heat. The Canadians won't know what hit them in 80 degrees in Buffalo. We take it in 7. Let's go, Buffalo. Stop hanging your head. It's time to win. It's go time, baby. Have a great show.
Paul, thanks
for the call. That Animal House quote will never not get a laugh out of me.
I know.
And my favorite is when people tweet it and someone has not seen Animal House.
Oh, Jeff Darlington does it all the time.
It's the best.
It's my favorite bit of his that he just keeps doing it.
The best. When people have not seen Animal House or do not know where that Germans bombed Pearl Harbor quote, it is my favorite thing in the world. It's just to be like, it's the best.
Yeah, no, you get the, actually.
I blacked out to the rest of what Paul said after he said that quote. It's my favorite thing. So, I'm kidding. I did not.
But, like, Paul's right about this, and I'm still here, too, on this. I didn't hear no bell. We just joked about it. I would like to continue to table the off-season discussions. I don't want to do that. I don't want to talk about that yet. Quite frankly, it is just a stern unwillingness to want to do this. I hope we get to continue with this. I hope we continue to put off all the off-season talk. I hope we get to talk about the next round. I didn't hear no bell. I'm still very irritated about last night, and I think you and I, again, have been on different philosophies on this, considering where we were on heading into game 4.
That's the funny thing. I mean, like, as you can probably tell in my tone, I'm not even really that upset. I love Paul's positivity there. I just, for me, it's 3 of the last 4 games. I think Montreal has looked like the better team than you.
They've acted like the better team,
yeah.
And it's, quite frankly, again, I hear my head coach saying, the top line's got to move their feet. That's why I'm irritated.
Yeah.
It's because, Zach, why was I never all that worried after losing those 2 games in games 2 and 3?
Well,
it's a matter of will.
Yeah, it's a matter of will. And if, as they did, you win once in Montreal, it's 2-2 and you've got a series with best of 3 home ice advantage. The problem is, though, best of 3, what did Montreal do? They immediately...
They've taken the first step.
Yeah.
The major stride. But for me, it is still... It's a matter of will. It's why I'm a little irritated, and it's also my biggest case for hope. Second line, Benson line, bless their hearts.
I was going to say, really, the middle six. Now that Hellenius is in, the middle six is performing well.
Fourth line's always going to move their feet. Third line looks like it's unlocked. Top line. Move your feet. Listen to your coach, who said it now very publicly. Because it's my greatest moment of consternation right now with this team from last night, and yet it is my greatest signal for hope. The minute you do it, we've got ourselves a very real chance at game 7.
It's like the Boston series now. When we were talking about that, it just became, just score first. Get on Boston. They can't go with you. And it took a while for the Sabres to be able to score first and actually get on top of Boston and force Boston to play their game, and it ultimately falls away for the Bruins. We're kind of at that point now, not bargaining, but just we're at that point of looking at the series and going, yeah, I know there's issues, but if the first line just showed up like the middle six did, they'll win games.
It's a simple ask at this point.
I think we're at the point now, though, in the postseason where I'm kind of done asking. I think the assumptions are there of you're not going to do it this year.
So ready? then it becomes break them up. The
right,
duo is
right.
not working.
Mm-hmm.
Swap something.
Then it becomes, you know, Tuck moves
don't
down.
Don't touch the
whatever.
Other. Don't touch that Benson line, obviously. That's something I've seen way too much on social media today, by the way, is, oh, put Benson in Doan with Tage. Why? Why would I risk sinking the best two forwards on the Buffalo Sabres right now? The way that Tage has been playing. Why would I risk that? Mm-hmm. Is it worth the reward of waking up Thompson?
Even where I kind of like the idea was just moving one of them. Benson up,
nope.
up top with Thompson.
Don't. That is your best line.
Mm-hmm.
They are scoring every game.
Yeah.
Do not.
So now it is. I mean, your thought on this.
My idea is Quinn for
Quinn
Tuck.
Yeah.
Maybe even like give a test run for McLeod being the like top line center, so to say. Hang on. Based on ice time, it would be second line now.
Yeah.
Benson, play him like your top line. That
also,
line?
I'm not doing that. I have not liked really anything from McLeod outside of the power play goal.
But that's also he was skating with the same players.
Yeah.
Wake people up.
It's just incredible that we have to have that conversation about the top line. Back to the phones. Bobby's up next. Bobby, how are we doing?
Guys, thank you for giving me an opportunity to vent and to go on a rant here because I got to tell you, I think this is embarrassing.
Keep it PG.
I think this is humiliating. Credit to Paul for being an optimistic guy, but I think Paul is delusional. How are the Buffalo Sabres going to win this series? Thompson stinks. Tuck stinks. They're minus 1,000 combined. They don't have a number one line. They've used both goalies in this series. Who are they going to put in Montreal on Saturday night? They're going to bring back Martin Biron?
Well, he's probably traveling. We could do that.
Martin St. Louis is putting Lindy Ruff in his back pocket. The Sabres are a fraud, and we understand now where Lindy got his nickname when he used to be a player. Ruff at home, Lindy on the road.
I kind of do like that, though, Bobby. I like where he ended there.
Let's not go ahead and call them Sabres fraudulent.
They won the division. They won a playoff round. Okay.
By the way, this is a long series. It's going six games.
Yeah, it is.
It's not a short series. It's not a sweep. That would turn them into frauds. This might just be a case of Montreal is better. The thing that's hidden in there, though, I've really liked Martin St. Louis' coaching.
Yeah, I think he's been great.
He's been great.
I think he's been great.
He has been great.
I still wouldn't bang on Lindy, though. Funny, rough at home, Lindy on the road. I actually really quite enjoyed that. But he can only do so much. If his top line is not performing, there's only so much he can do.
Well,
and even I would the Luukkonen thing. Am I going to bench a guy that just had 28 saves in Montreal? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Again, hindsight is 20/20. Oh, no one was putting Lyon in the net last night. Nobody.
Some I told you so's on social media might have, but that's more of their disdain for Luukkonen as a whole rather than making the smart, logical decision.
Here. But if it happened in the morning skate, Lyon's got the net.
What are we doing?
What are we doing?
Exactly. Like, it's not the logical decision. It's just born out of hatred. So what are you doing, really? You're giving a biased opinion about a player that you already don't like. It would not have been the right move.
No,
the problem with Luukkonen
saves in Montreal the game prior.
The problem with Luukkonen is that in back-to-back games, again, in the postseason, you got the best and worst of him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to jive for the postseason. That's okay. But, yeah, I get it.
Minus 1,000, though.
I get it. You're mad. You're upset. I understand. Nice job keeping it PG. Thank you for that, by the way. But
they're not frauds, though. They're not frauds.
To answer his first question, how are you going to win the series? It is the same problem that we've been talking about now for five games. Your top line needs to act like it.
803-0550, the number to call. If you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you when we come back. This is WGR. Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff wrapped up speaking with the media a couple of minutes ago. We did get some nuggets there. Owen Power said to Lindy this morning he's currently getting treatment. He feels a lot better than he expected, so that is definitely a good sign.
That is good.
And then in terms of if we're going to get any morning skate stuff tomorrow, potentially don't bank on it. Ruff saying that he's leaning towards them not even skating tomorrow and just giving it all for that elimination game. So it might be we'll wait to see if there's any sort of lineup changes at puck drop.
And on that, he has the quote. Our own Paul Hamilton has it up here. I know the pressure they're feeling. I know how they feel and care. A day away from the rink is a good thing. He also says there is no looking back and that everything is going to be geared toward game six. But I like that quote. Like, I know the pressure they're feeling. And maybe you take them away from the rink for a day just so that they can try to clear their minds. I don't hate that. I think that it's going to be an interesting thing here. By the way, I think you know, it's kind of funny we did this as a bit with Paul. Permission to be a jerk.
Yeah, it's fine.
If Owen Power plays anywhere near 20 minutes tomorrow night, I don't want to hear a single one of you call in saying he's not physical or tough enough.
He's soft.
I actually am going to say shut up.
I was
like, that's going to be me being a jerk right now for a moment. If Power plays even close to 20 minutes on what happened to him, I don't want to hear a single one of you call in and say he's not tough enough anymore.
I was starting to check out of the game around that point. They just were not able to get anything going. They were not able to make it a game. Montreal was doing a lot of what Buffalo was able to do, close out those third periods and just make it a frustrating watch. And so I was just kind of preparing like, all right, it's 3-2 Montreal on to Saturday. And then the Power injury happens. And, I mean, Derek, you probably had the same feeling. My heart kind of sank because we're talking about it this morning. Find a way to win in game
six. My stomach was in my throat all of a sudden.
Yeah, find a way to win game six, and it's all to play 4 and 7. If Power is not healthy, they don't win tomorrow. He has been one of their most stout defensemen to this point. And if he's not in there, we're already seeing the problems. If any of the top four are not playing well, Byram's not playing well in the series. Well, now the team defense in general isn't playing well. We saw, you know, Connor Timmins yesterday. After we're all sort of worried it might be, you know, Logan Stanley, Luke Shen, you maybe almost hope that happened after the game Timmins had. They would not be able to win game six in Montreal if Owen Power did ultimately end up getting hurt. I do want to bring this up, though, because I either mentioned it on air or maybe me and you talked about it off. One of the smaller stories, and maybe it turns out to be a big one, but one of the smaller stories I thought that could happen based off the results of last night's game, if they lost, would start to be, man, they really can't win at home. That's becoming a real problem. And we took a call to start this week right after they made it 2-2 of, I'm leery about them playing at home. I'd almost much rather them be on the road. Funny enough, that's kind of becoming true. I feel great about them winning game six, even after last night. And now the comments about Owen Power, I feel very good. They're very, very good when pushed into the corner. I don't feel wonderful about them being at home for a game seven. I don't. Because these games aren't even close games that they're losing at home.
And it's not exclusive to this series, though. That's the other problem.
It's in Boston as well.
It's against Boston at home, too, where they don't look like they have their best hockey going on. Game ones against both Boston and Montreal, the only wins they have, they're fantastic. However, it's also the introduction to the teams. Once you've played
And game ones are weird.
Game ones are weird, but it's also the introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Once they've gotten familiar, the Sabres have not won at home against each opponent. Now, you need to win both of these games. That will include winning at home. So, I got great news, Zach. It's a pretty easy formula how they move on to the next round. They have to fix the things that are broken. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They have to win at home. And, well, I mean, they have to win at Bell Center first.
Yes.
But in order to do that, you also probably just need your best players to not be a detriment anymore. Like, simple as that. There are no excuses. There's no real logic that we can put into this anymore. And I'm glad that, you know, there's only 25 minutes left in this show.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's as simple as, no, you have to fix these things. They're looking right at you. It's ugly. It's kind of terrifying some fans now at this point. But you win game six, anything becomes possible.
It does, but you're right about the issues. I mean, it's probably not fair to ask now, right? You know,
I'm going to ask.
You know, I'll ask the question here in a moment, but less than 24 hours after another terrible game by him, are you paying Alex Tuch anywhere between $8.5 and $11 million in his next contract for 7 years?
Well, let's see.
Right.
Force the issue.
The story's not done, but to this point, I'd be surprised if you got 20% of fans that were willing to give him that kind of contract at 7 years. You know, Tage Thompson, his contract is still a bargain. But boy, in his first playoffs, and I do want to reiterate that, first playoffs, for the most part, he has been a passenger. Now yeah. He is hurting them. Game one against Boston, wonderful. I think game six against Boston, very good. In the middle of that Boston series and now most of Montreal, not very good. Not very good. Some of the analytic numbers did like him against Boston. So far, that has not been the case against Montreal. Somehow, he still leads the team in points, by the way. That is incredible. He is going to be a curious case of teams just looking, you know, 5 years down the road or whatever, looking at like, oh, he was pretty good in his first playoffs. No, he wasn't. It's kind of the same now, funny enough, because Mitch Marner's having such a run here with Vegas. What are they, 13 games? He has 18 points. Like, he's been incredible. But he's had other years where they play, what was it, 12, 13 games. He'll wind up with 13 or 14 points. But he has, like, two goals. Like, it's all assists. And that's sort of what Tage has been. It's a lot of secondary assists, two goals in game one, a gift in, what is that game, game three? And then a lucky bounce off of a very weird backboard in Montreal to give him four. It's not what you need from your 40-plus goal scorer, especially when he is him and Tuck are your main goal scorers. Tuck has not scored since the first-round series against Boston. Tage has scored twice in this series. Both are much less, ooh, Tage is finding himself and more, okay, that's going to happen sometimes in hockey. It's just the fact of it. And then Krebs. By the way, we had one caller brought up, and I think it was fair to bring up because he didn't mention Krebs being a problem. He mentioned Norris. And I thought that was. I wish we had more time, or I just remember to get to it because that was a good point. That Norris is your highest paid forward, right? Like that's why everyone is also complaining about the production is he can't just be a second or third line center. His contract will not allow that.
His contract does not allow that. His place in the depth chart has allowed that for the majority of the season. But now he's playing on that top line.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike the other two players that were mentioned in that call, Josh Norris is not getting his face caved in his own zone.
No, he's at least been able to be a good defensive responsibility.
There's a bad play that involves him last night, mm-hmm. but I think that's more on Timmins than on Norris because either way, Timmins is putting a pizza up the middle, which is a no-no in all hockey circles. But Norris has at least been... It's almost like this weird, sickening, like, lack of luck when it comes to production for him as well. Because he is in the right spots a lot of times. Last night, Josh Norris's biggest crime was that puck didn't see twine. He was rifling shots. He was creating great chances. He was very good defensively.
He's also had a few broken sticks, hasn't he? Which, that's been a whole thing.
But, again, it's still your biggest crime last night. Unfortunately, you are paid to put the puck in the net. It's a pretty big crime, unfortunately, based on why he was given that contract in Ottawa. He's a premier goal scorer. He's not scoring goals.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't hated what he's been doing either.
No, well, because it's been almost funny to watch. Like, I wouldn't break up now the Benson Doan Norris line.
Not touching it for a second.
I initially had that idea of maybe moving Benson up. I've moved off of that. Now it helps that Norris is going as well. But again, like you mentioned, he's been in good spots. It's almost been funny that, like, Benson and Doan almost haven't needed him on some of these plays. Yet he's right there.
He's
within the orbit of the scoring play, but he's not going to get any of the credit for it, right?
Right.
I mean, you have to like sort of remember these plays. And in a few years from now, we may not remember them, right?
We're not going to, probably.
We all may just look at the stat sheet and go, yeah, Norris didn't do anything. It's Benson and Doan doing all of it, which in some ways, yeah.
In some ways, that is correct. There are plays that have also developed because a turnover has happened. What we probably don't see is Norris is probably covering something up the boards while Doan or Benson create the turnover and then finds the other madman. That's something that's happening. Benson's game-winning goal is on the power play that Norris is not a part of.
He is not a part of it, by the way.
That's kind of where the cruel hand of fate has shown up there, where Tage has been actively hurting them. He gets the secondary assist on Benson's goal because he kicks it to Doan.
Mm-hmm.
Norris is not even on the ice for that.
Right. But that's also, to Tage's point, it's not like it was a savvy play.
No.
He just lays it off to Doan. Doan fires it in front of the net, and Benson brings it home. But like, that's
where the cruel hand of fate with the numbers mm-hmm. shows up.
It's almost like Norris has been the better forward.
He's been the better center of the two.
But Tage is the one that has all of the points. Right. Tage has 11 points in 11 games. Josh Norris has 2 points in 8 games. That's incredible. It's not to say Norris has been significantly better and you're sitting there going, I don't know how he doesn't have 15 points. It's not that. It is just more.
But it's a cruel enough twist of fate.
Yeah. It is really something.
To a point.
Even Don Lean, we're talking about inconsistencies. He's third on the team in points with 8.
And last night he's on the board. But again, we see signs of brilliance sometimes with Dahlin in the series. We're seeing more consistency from Josh Norris in the series. You're getting less than nothing from Alex Tuck. You're getting actively hurt by Thompson sometimes. He's collecting points, but he's still not been great five on five. He's been awful. To a point where Peyton Krebs is almost a victim.
Right. I mentioned Norris. I almost feel bad for Krebs. He's never going to be the guy that's going to drive offense.
No.
He's not going to be the guy that, quote-unquote, unlocks Tuck and Thompson if they're struggling.
No.
Probably not. That's not his game. His game is to do the dirty work,
facilitate,
make savvy passes when he can,
yep,
facilitate. And so if those two are struggling, probably 3 for 3 now.
The role player on that line is going to struggle when the two aces are not giving you anything.
Yeah.
And that could be Krebs. That could be Benson.
Benson is different for me, where I think Benson is the kind of player that if those two are – this is why I did like the idea
Benson's
initially. I think
turning into less of a role player sort of thing.
All year, wherever line he wound up on, even if it was maybe a struggle for 2 or 3 games, it eventually got going. The line eventually worked.
He incites chaos no matter where he is. But say, for example, you try – and they tried it last night. Hellenius gets a shift with Tage and Tuck.
Mm-hmm.
McLeod gets a majority of shifts afterward with Tage and Tuck. Nothing. Maybe you need to just split up Tage and Tuck. Wake them up.
They're going to have to. And now they're facing elimination. Throw everything at the wall. See what happens.
Good news is you have a chance to try to fix it. You have a chance to shake it up. And you have a chance to make things different.
803-0550, the number to call. Sabres Live is coming up at the top of the hour. Brad Ryder, Tim Graham, 1-3. Show up in the Bulldog, 3-7. Going to be a lot of Game 6 talk as we try to turn the page now with the series heading back to Montreal, and the Sabres do trail 3-2. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer on WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick final segment here before we hand the reins off to Sabres Live at the top of the hour. We've been talking mainly Sabres today. It should be mentioned, though, as well, in the middle of that game, actually during the really fun first period, the Bills' 2026 schedule did officially drop.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's a thing that happened that I totally... I'm going to sound like a real ass for a moment here. I didn't even look at the Bills' schedule. The only thing I know is that we are going to be working Thanksgiving and Christmas. Thanks,
yes,
NFL.
Yes.
Hate that.
I had to kind of help out working, so I had to pay attention for the schedule. But yes, we do.
I still haven't looked at it, actually.
Well, there are 7 night games. They've got Thursday night football against the Lions, Monday night football, Rams, Monday night football against the Vikings, Thanksgiving night against the Chiefs, Sunday night football at the Packers, which is awesome. I love that.
Sunday night against the Packers seems cool.
Saturday night against the Bears, and then they will play then on Christmas Day following that at 4:30 at the Broncos. So it's not a total night game, but they're going to count that as one of those.
Sunday night Green Bay aside, I hate this.
Really? I'm okay with all of it.
What's with all the abnormal weeks?
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah.
You're giving the Bills tons of short weeks.
Well, because you get at Texans that first Sunday, and immediately short week into Thursday night football.
Versus
the Lions.
At Houston to start the season?
Yeah.
Love that. Don't love that, obviously. Thanks. Man, NFL, you stink.
They can't win in that building. It's not like that's a particularly imposing building. No disrespect. But, man, they can't win there.
Also, why are you going there again? Get over here.
Yeah, the last time that they were here, I think that's Davis Mills in a rainstorm, and the Bills went like 40-6.
Yeah, get your butts over here. Let's see how you like it.
It's actually, I think, the last Bills game I was in attendance for. Home game. Said they go to a Baltimore game, I think, the next year.
Stupid NFL.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call for more on the schedule. We do have a piece up at our website, WGR550.com. But let's go back to the phones here, and Brian is next up. Brian, good morning. How are we doing, man?
Pretty good.
What do you got for us?
Yeah. You were talking about whether or not Alex Tuck should get another deal because he's fallen pretty flat in this second round. Personally, I'm pretty glad that he led the team all season and got us to the second round. I don't think he should be denied a new contract because he failed to get us to the third round after 14 years. I don't know.
But Brian, are you going to set yourself up? But are you going to set yourself up poorly for ultimately the 1 year? Would you be willing to pay him $10.5-11 million, which he might be able to get on the open market a year for a guy that is turning 30 and ultimately was not a good playoff performer for you, at least in the 1 year?
Well, I don't know. I guess. Hey, if he says something like I've been playing with my ankle taped up since the third game of Boston, I don't know, but
you also have to be willing to probably lose one of the young guys.
True, very true. If we do pay Alex Tuck, yeah, someone else is going to fall off, is unable to be going to be paid. But I think it would be much more detrimental to this team if Alex Tuck left.
Brian, appreciate the call. And really, the biggest shame here is that you called in and we only have like a minute to really get into this.
And I do want to say it is a detriment if they lose him and they don't bring in somebody to replace him. Bulldog has been on this too. You can't just lose Alex Tuck and hope all the young guys get it done. If you lose Tuck, I better be seeing a Nico Hischier or Robert Thomas trade like 2 weeks afterwards at the latest.
Brian, I'm going to ask a favor of you. I want to have this discussion further. Let's see what happens with the rest of round two. And if the Sabres do get to the third round, with or without Tuck producing, we'll talk about this soon enough. This conversation will have to happen eventually. Be sure to be ready with it again when the context is all unfolded from there, because it's going to be a fun, nuanced discussion. And by fun, I do mean potentially stressful. I just hate that we don't have the time to really expound on it.
We don't have that, but you want another fun thing? This is for the Bills schedule.
Oh, boy.
So we already know at Houston,
you say
Detroit
fun
at home.
Bills schedule, and I don't believe you.
Do you want to hear the next two games?
Home
against the Chargers, home against New England. Boy, that is a first four games if I've ever seen one.
Oh, and then they get to take two straight road trips, then the bye week.
At Rams, at Las
what
Vegas.
What did the Bills do to upset Roger Goodell?
It's a heck of a first six games.
I'm TPing his house.
That's going to do it for me and Derek. Have a great weekend, everyone. Sabres Live coming up next on WGR.